trust the path and trust the journey. And what I mean by that is there will be hard times for sure, definitely. And part of this life is hardship, but you kind of just have to ride that wave. You just have to keep going every single day and there will be highs. And one thing I didn't used to do is look back and realize, look how far you've come. So even if I'm in a hard place right now, this is a hard place, but on a higher kind of level. You know, last year I was in a hard place, but on a lower level. So just even looking at that growth allows me to realize just to keep on going.
I'm Ethan Devitt, and welcome to the 50 Faces podcast, a podcast committed to revealing the richness and diversity of the world of investment and tech by focusing on people and their stories. I'm joined today by Kike Onowinda Egoro, who's the founder and CEO of BYP Network, a platform that connects Black professionals to each other and corporations. She's a BSc Economics graduate at the University of Nottingham, a University of Florida MSc scholar, and an ex-Great Britain javelin thrower. She previously worked in investment banking and then in business development at a fast-growing financial technology company for 2 years because she realized that tech is the future. Kike was a member of the Forbes 30 Under 30 in 2019, the Maserati Top 100 Most Innovative Founders, and a Financial Times Top 100 BAME Leaders in Technology in 2018. She's on the board of the London Chambers of Commerce Black Business Association, Getting On Boards, and is a London Tech Ambassador. Welcome, Kike. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, we're delighted to have you. But let's start with your background and career journey, because anything that involves that kind of level of professional sport, I want to hear all about. So where did you grow up and how did you come to ultimately enter the world of tech and finance?
Yeah, sure. So I grew up in Dagenham, which is seen as East London slash Essex, however you want to position it. And I studied economics as an undergraduate, but I did a master's in management. And that was at the University of Florida on my full track and field scholarship. And so my journey is quite interesting because what happened was, I think that was around the credit crunch when I was in secondary school. And I used to think, what is this credit crunch? Why does everyone hate the bankers? You know, how do I become a rich banker that everybody hates? So that kind of came to mind. And then I looked more into finance because of that. And then I got a first internship through Deutsche Bank. It was a program called I Have a Dream by Windsor Fellowship. So that's a charity that helps basically underrepresented talent get into banking and finance. And at the time, I didn't know I was underrepresented talent. I didn't know there was a problem, you know, with getting diverse people into these kind of industries. But that was my first understanding of that when I had my internship, because it was a program for BAME students. But out of 20, 18 were Asian and only 2 were Black. So that was my first realization that even in BAME, Black is still very underrepresented. And that kind of leads to why BYP was Black focused versus BAME. So if I jump, that's why I'm jumping. And so from my experience in interning there, and then I interned at Goldman Sachs and Barclays, I did quite a few internships off the back of that. I then realized like finance wasn't for me. I just never felt very comfortable. There was barely any Black people in the bank, or there'll be cleaners or security guards. And I just felt very uncomfortable. And I remember thinking that, you know, I'm here as an international athlete with stellar grades, you know, from a state school. But the person next to me, who was a white guy, would be like, my dad got me in. I just saw the discrepancies from quite early on. I just never felt quite comfortable working in finance. So then I went off to America. I got my scholarship. I did my sports out there. I got my master's. And then when I came back, I decided to work in a fintech. And like you said in the intro, I realized tech was the future. This was a time where, you know, with Uber and Bumble and all these kind of apps were coming out and about. And I wanted to kind of get into tech and see what the opportunities were. So that's how I entered tech and finance. And then I obviously started my own company. So yeah, I'm sure there's other questions, but yeah, that's my journey so far.
That is great. Well, yes, we're going to dive into all of the current work, but I'd love to first go back to the professional sports time, because I think there must be such incredible training, discipline, learn to deal with, I suppose, failure in the form of losing or not winning, and the resilience you build from that. Can you talk to us a little bit about maybe what your experience playing sports at that level, particularly javelin throwing, which I will admit I know nothing about, and what that taught you in your professional life?
It taught me so much. I feel like, I always say, I feel like I cheated in terms of entrepreneurship, because it was such an easy transition from athlete to entrepreneur. So like you mentioned, resilience is number one, right? You have to go to training. I was training like 5 days a week for 2 to 3 hours a day. body will ache, but you have to wake up and go again, essentially. And then you also had to be patient because results come in time. It's not automatic. So you have to kind of keep training and then wait to see the results. And again, that's the same with entrepreneurship, or what I do now is we do so much, but the results kind of show slowly and they build up. And that's the same with being an athlete. You train, you train, you train, and you're getting stronger every day and better every single day. But I think the kind of main lesson it also taught me was failure, because every day kind of in training, it's up and down. I might have a good training session or a bad training session, but you have to kind of keep going. And when it came to competition as well, honestly, in a year, I might compete 30 times and only throw one personal best in that whole year. But that one personal best is all I needed to have a fantastic year. But you can imagine all the losses were painful and very, very hard to get back up and go again. But then you're waiting for that one big result. And I think, again, that's the same with entrepreneurship. So it's just taught me the fact that you have to be patient in this journey and failure is a part of it. But it takes that one big deal or that, you know, one amazing client to just change your think around.
So interesting, because I had another guest who focused on venture capital and he talks about the unicorns lying in the variation. And in that, he talks about just having the number of deals you have to do to kind of hit that unicorn. And when you're speaking about that kind of the number of competitions you have to enter and then the number of personal bests, it's clearly it's a numbers game. It's just about repetition and practice. Really interesting.
Exactly. Exactly. And getting back up, you know, not quitting because you had a bad competition, but knowing that it could be the next competition. You're one competition away, essentially.
And then you moved to set up the Black Young Professionals Network to change the Black narrative based on similarities you saw in the experience of Black professionals and working abroad. I think that's so interesting because the whole central message of this podcast series is we bring together entrepreneurs and venture capitalists from both sides of the Atlantic. And what has struck me is how utterly similar their narratives and experiences are. Can you talk to us a little bit about changing the Black narrative, what that means to you?
So yeah, literally, as you mentioned, so when I went off to America, so I was in Florida, I went with that naivety as well of what I see on TV, you know, like, oh, Black people, we are just athletes and we are just kind of entertainers. And obviously, I was an athlete at the time as well. And so my whole vision of my future was just about sports because that's where Black people succeed. That's the only way to be successful. And again, like I said, I was in banking and I didn't see us there either. So we're definitely not successful there. So these were kind of the narratives I went in with. And, you know, when you grow up in London, you know, when you open the newspaper, you see on TV, it's always about knife crime and stabbings. It's always about gang or the fact that, you know, Black people are failing more than white people. It's always something very negative. So I went in with that negative view of myself, of my community, essentially. And when I went to America, actually, I just saw so many variations of success. So even though I was on a sports scholarship, I was also part of my master's management program. And just the people I interacted with, not just Black people, obviously, but the Black people really stood out to me because there were people who, oh, I've traveled all these places. Oh, I got offered a job in Silicon Valley and I was able to set my own salary. I'm a doctor here. I just heard so many incredible stories and met so many people. And I just felt like, wow, I would never have met them if I didn't get the scholarship. And I would never have known this, basically. And why doesn't everybody else know this? And why can't I meet these people without having to come to America? Or how do other people meet people that are doing well in our community, in the world of work? So these kind of questions were really on my mind. And I just really felt like we all just need to come together and find each other so that we can know what's possible, essentially. So that's where my whole view of changing the Black narrative came from, because not my own view of the Black narrative, many people's view of the Black narrative is quite negative, but it needs to be positive because there are people doing positive things. So my trip abroad and then coming back and working in the startup, all this kind of came together as, yeah, I really want to build BYP. I really want us to find each other and just grow.
There's certainly, this is the zeitgeist, I suppose, of the development of groups like that. I've seen a lot of groups focus on not kind of recreating or providing maybe a synthetic sort of set of social capital for people, young Black professionals, young Latino professionals, because they don't maybe have that social capital from their own family or network that you mentioned your colleagues at the bank had. So, but maybe you can kind of put it in place synthetically by creating these groups, deliberately being kind of purposeful, intentional about it. One thing I'd love to ask is, though, just like we've seen a kind of, when we see so many groups develop, do you think they're all the same well-intentioned? Do you think that they'll all survive? Do you think there's going to be a little bit of lip service paid maybe to it by some groups and that some won't sort of stay the course? How are you constructing BYP to stay the course?
Yeah, what a great, great question. I mean, I think it depends on why people start it, right? So I started it from a place of real desire and need. Like, we need this platform. We need to come together as a Black community. We need better representation. We need to find each other. And that passion is what made me start it. Whereas I'd say some people start groups maybe for their own branding or just for the fact that they want a group or whatever it is. So I say that because I think the foundation of starting the group is super important for whether the group can last. And I always say BYP Network has grown so much in the past 6 years because it's authentic. Like, I always say I didn't want to start BYP. In fact, when I had the idea, it was just an idea and I was hoping someone else would start it. But everyone around me was like, that idea you had, why have you not got started? Like, you should do it. You should do it. So it's always kind of been grounded in this just needs to exist. I don't necessarily need to be the leader of this or to build this. But since I have the vision for it and I know what needs to be done, let me just go forward. So I think, again, with these groups, if it's authentic, if they have a vision for it and if they really want it to succeed, then why not? And that's what we've seen with BYP so far.
Well, I'm just going to introduce some numbers just into this, just so people get a sense of the scale of what you've grown. So it now has over 150,000 members. These may be out of date. I'm just getting these from LinkedIn, but I'm sure they're greater now. Over 1,000 corporate clients, including Facebook, Farfetch. Over 15,000 of your members have been upskilled through mentorship, thought leadership events, and industry-specific insights. So that's clearly a real impact there. And you've led successful crowdfunding campaigns with investors to raise money, obviously, to further this work. Can you talk to us a little bit about what you're working on now, your priorities and maybe your future plans? What excites you?
Yeah, sure. So right this moment, it's All Things Leadership Conference. It's happening next month. So October 6th, it will be at the Mermaid and we're expecting over 600 people. And it's the first time we're in person since obviously pre-pandemic, so 2019. So we're just so, so excited. We have over 60 speakers, over 30 corporate sponsors. The theme of it is knowledge is power. So essentially the last 3 years, the Leadership Conference has been kind of a series. So it's titled A Decade of Proactive Change. And this third year, the focus is knowledge is power. And what we mean by that is how we as Black leaders can share our knowledge to help other people become leaders too, and share our knowledge to help people be allies or to understand, you know, what it takes to navigate the world of work or different industries. And it's just going to be completely jam-packed. There's workshops, there's panel sessions, there's exhibitor booths, like I said, by the corporate clients. And there's also kind of an after party as well. So literally that's our main focus right now, because you can imagine conference planning is not a joke. So hopefully, yeah, we're excited to open our doors and to be back in person. And then just in terms of BYP, you know, we're working on so much. It's been, like I said, 6 years will be next month as well. So it'll be our 6 year anniversary. And, you know, we've been a platform. And when I say platform, it's more like a community that, you know, they go to our events, they listen to the podcasts that we've had, the blogs, like all the different things that we do, even our mentorship program. But there still hasn't been a home for them, you know, like somewhere they can log in, interact with each other, you know, that kind of direct one-on-one. So we are back planning to create that. And tech is not easy. I'm sure many, many people know this. We've started and stopped quite a few times in building a platform. But we are back now and building one, and we're excited to do that and to launch one. So I'd say those are our main focuses right now, as well as the normal things that we do with all our corporate clients.
And I'm particularly interested in the upskilling, because, you know, the conference can be fantastic, a very energizing event. But sometimes some people will leave that conference and maybe nothing will happen, or they will kind of not make the progress they want. They'll be energized, but they won't be able to move to the next level. How does that mentorship work for you, and how long do you let it last with the candidates?
Yeah, great question. So one thing about the conference is they will leave with a lot. Someone described it in 2019 when it was last in person as Black Heaven. You know, like that energy and the atmosphere is just so incredible that it just leaves them just feeling pumped and ready to just tackle the world. And also they connect with so many people that, like I said, they don't get to see every day. So it is that kind of eye-opening experience and something that, you know, one should not miss out on. But in terms of the mentorship, so we do have a mentorship program, which pretty much all our partners are signed up to, where their employees mentor our members. So we do it in cohorts of about, let's say, anywhere from 10 to 30. And it lasts for about 6 months, just 1 hour a month. And they help them with their confidence. They help them get a job. They help them just in general. Any kind of help that they need is what that mentor is for. And we actually have a matching algorithm. So we make sure the match is perfect. So if you, for example, want to mentor someone to be a woman in leadership and who wants to be a woman in leadership, we'll make sure from our algorithm that's been ticked on that person's side as well. So we've got like a 9.5 or something NPS score. Many of our partners have hired from that program and many have come back each, you know, with more cohorts. So yeah, mentorship is definitely a product that we offer. And I think even at the conference, people naturally gain mentors as well from people that they meet.
That's fantastic. And you mentioned your early experience with finance not being a particularly inclusive or welcoming environment there, and as a result, looking elsewhere. If you were to look now at the tech industry that you're in or at financial services, because I'm sure you have a lens into that too, how far do you think they've come? What score would you give them in terms of their current levels of diversity and inclusion?
So I'd say my internship started literally a decade ago now, which is crazy to say. And obviously at the time I was new into this world. I didn't even know, like I said, that there was a diversity issue and all that kind of stuff. It's hard for me to kind of give a score and to say how far they've come, because now that I'm in the conversation and I work with these clients and I work with these partners, I know their intention. I know that they want change. I know that they are actively trying with some of the different programs that they're doing. One of our gold sponsors, for example, is Morgan Stanley, and we do loads of work with Morgan Stanley. So for me, it's like I can see the intention. I see how they're working and I can see how our community are kind of engaging and understanding and the hires that have been made. But it's still hard to say because we need percent changes, right? We need to see, it needs to represent the communities. So I think London has like 15% Black and ethnic minorities. So their companies need to represent that from the bottom all the way through to the top. So I know those changes haven't quite happened. And I know it's a process. So it's very, very hard to kind of give that kind of scoring. But I know that they are actively working hard to make change.
Well, that's great to hear. And certainly in terms of the intention there. So one thing that occurs to me, you mentioned that when you went into finance, you were not aware of being a minority and that it kind of hit you maybe like as a bit of a shock when you got there. I had a similar experience myself going into law. My law class was mostly women. Then I went in and realized I was a minority. Do you think it's better generally for, say, the graduates of today to go in with an awareness perhaps of what to expect in terms of maybe not having a lot of representation? Or do you think it's better to go in not knowing?
It's better to know for sure. I wish I knew, because I always think of my time in finance, you know, when I was interning, as someone who was just always on edge. I was so uncomfortable. And I just, you know, maybe it's high anxiety or imposter syndrome, whatever it was, I just felt like I didn't belong. But I think if I had known before, that would have helped. I still would have gone in, but I would at least know that people won't look like me. And I used to say that if only the bank as well were aware, they know that this person coming in, there's not many looking like them. Tell the staff, tell other people, look, these people are coming in, make them feel comfortable. But I always felt like no one really understood the fact that I was so uncomfortable. So yeah, I think it's better to know and be prepared to kind of enter that kind of world, or any world that doesn't have people that look like you.
It's definitely true that there is more preparation there now. I suppose the key thing now is not to let that fact of underrepresentation put people off.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd love to return just to some personal reflections now. If you look back at your own journey, were there any key people in that? Did you have any mentors yourself or anyone who influenced you in a particular way?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, everyone knows my number one influence is my mum. Sadly, she passed away literally 9 months today. But she was just, yeah, she was my idol. Like our conversations, her intelligence, just absolutely everything. So she was definitely the number one person. And then just along the journey, yes, I've had mentors for sure. And part of my experience with the mentors is also why the mentorship program exists in BYP, because there were mentors that don't look like me. You know, there were women and men in different industries who grew up differently from me, but they just had my back is the best way to describe it. It's like someone fighting for you or who just wants you to win. And to have someone like that is so important. And yeah, so I've had some for sure.
And maybe just returning to the athletics coaches, I'm sure you had your share of different coaches. Did anyone coaching style stick with you as being particularly effective?
Yes, yes. So my main coach, a guy called Sam Harrison, actually, and we're back in touch because I thought, let me get back into javelin just for exercise to drop the baby weight. And so, yeah, he was actually fantastic growing up, like a real kind of just someone who he would pick me up for training, you know, drop me off, take me to competitions, you know, in the times when my mum couldn't do it, for example, and just really cared about mine and all the other athletes' growth. And the reason I know it's genuine is that, like I said, he still does it now. He's continued to do it and he enjoys doing it. So yeah, I've always had a coach, and again, and the coach doesn't look like me. And that's also why BYP Network is just so much about connecting to allies as well. We do a big push about allyship, because to be successful, it's about those that help you around. And it doesn't have to be people who look like you. It has to be people who care about you and who can connect to you and help you in any way.
And I think somebody mentioned something before, is that on another podcast, it's not so much about the advice people give you. It's the fact that people believe in you. And you mentioned your mom believing in you, people in your network having your back, your coach believing in you. And I think that that is, if we can just believe in others, we don't necessarily need to have all the answers for them. I mean, how can we? But it's just that, it's just that knowledge around them. Looking at any piece of advice that you received from any of these people or that you've picked up yourself along the way, is there any wisdom or creed or motto that you live by?
If I'm honest, I think I wouldn't say there's a motto I live by other than my own experiences. So what I mean by that is, in my soon to be 30, I'm 30 next month, I think I've realized to just trust the path and trust the journey. And what I mean by that is, there will be hard times, for sure, definitely. And part of this life is hardship, but you kind of just have to ride that wave. You just have to keep going every single day, and there will be highs. And one thing I didn't used to do is look back and realize, look how far you've come. So even if I'm in a hard place right now, this is a hard place, but on a higher kind of level. You know, last year I was in a hard place, but on a lower level. So just even looking at that growth allows me to realize just to keep on going. So yeah, I'd say it's just from my own journey that that's the advice I take. And when I look at other people, again, I just realize that it's about patience. You know, I think the problem we have in the whole startup ecosystem is this whole, oh, they've only been around a year. Look, they're a unicorn company. But, you know, to grow a business, it isn't overnight. It can take a decade. It can take 2 decades, but it's okay, because if you've got this mission and this kind of goal you're trying to achieve, just keep working on that and then the results will show. So I think, yeah, it's been my own journey, and just listening to other people and seeing other people's journeys as well.
Well, thank you so much, Kike. I think when you do look back at what you've built, the numbers really do speak for themselves. This is so much more than a platform and a network. This is a movement. And yeah, I am excited for you for the October 6th conference, what lies ahead. And I hope that by getting this podcast out in advance of that, we'll be able to get more attention to that. I know it seems like you're already going to be jam-packed. But thank you for what you're doing, for bringing your energy, your commitment and vision to this, such an area which is so important for creating what I hope will be the role model bench of the future. So thank you for coming here and sharing your insights with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm Ethan Devitt. Thank you for listening to the 50 Faces podcast. If you liked what you heard and would like to tune in to hear more inspiring investors and their personal journeys, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment advice, and all views are personal and should not be attributed to the organizations and affiliations of the host or any guest.